Hello, everyone.
Welcome to the Tie Podcast.
Culture.
Competition.
Architecture.
The dirt.
Drinking.
Eating.
Reading.
Thinking.
God, I love the dirt.
Let's not waste any more time.
Let's go straight to the pod.
Thank you all for being here.
We greatly appreciate the support.
Welcome to the Tie Podcast.
I think I made him earn it, you know, without a doubt. And it's, I have no regrets for that match. And I think that's really important. Just looking back on it, I'm really happy with how I played and just proud of my performance. I'd 100% pitch myself to Waffle House. You know, I think we could get some t-shirts like Body by Waffle House. I think it'd be pretty funny.
Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining me today at the Tie Podcast. My name is Henry Shemp, and my guest this week is 2023 U.S. Amateur runner-up Neil Shipley. Neil and I actually got to play a practice round at Cherry Hills ahead of the U.S. Amateur, and I will say I thought he was a really good guy when we played together in that practice round, but I was fairly blown away by speaking with him at the pod today. His perspective on the game of golf and just life in general is super impressive for a guy who's only 23 years old. The way he thinks through competition and the things that he has ahead of him over the next year, all really refreshing to hear, and I think everyone's going to really enjoy this episode. We, of course, talk about some other stuff, such as the Pittsburgh food scene, what Neil likes to do off the course, quantitative finance, and more. Again, I think everyone's really going to enjoy this episode. I greatly enjoyed having Neil on, so without any further delay, let's get straight to it. All right, welcoming in to the Tie today, Neil Shipley, 2023 U.S. Amateur runner-up. Neil, I appreciate you taking the time. Thank you for joining me.
Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
Yeah, this will be fun. So before we go anywhere, the people want to know, I want to know, what have you been drinking, eating, reading, and thinking lately?
You know, drinking, we got a lot of coffee coming up just for school, and, you know, it's always been a go-to. I generally... Burgers, bagels in the morning. It's tough to beat. That's what we've been drinking and eating. Reading Matthew McConaughey's,
Green Lights.
I've been loving that. I'm actually reading it for the second time just to get a little bit deeper dive into it. So I've been loving that. And then thinking just kind of been trying to think about what's coming up in April and just kind of getting some plans ready for that. It's been a busy few months, but it's super exciting.
Nice. Yeah, we'll talk about that some today. Two things I want to hit on there. One, what's your looks like you got a coffee right now. Good man. Mm-hmm. What's your coffee game? What do you order? What do you like? Where do you go? Like, give me the coffee rundown.
So I usually like to make my own coffee at home, grab my own beans and have a little setup. But if we can't be doing that, it's Dunkin's usually the go-to all the time. And it's just a straight large black coffee. If we're really tired, we might put a few shots of espresso in it. But I don't like sugary coffee or, you know, really creamy coffee. So just black coffee and keep it simple and easy.
So is Dunkin' everywhere? And you're from Pittsburgh. Is it everywhere mm-hmm. up there as well? I know, like, anytime I'm in the New York metro area, it just amazes me how many Dunkin's there are.
Yeah. They're all over Pittsburgh. There's probably two or three. I might drive into the city back there, and there's one or two on the way to the golf course too. So it's kind of everywhere. It's just a really good go-to stop.
Nice. And so then on Green Lights, that's also one of my all-time favorite books. I probably read it 2-ish years ago and just absolutely mm-hmm. loved it. I'm curious if there's anything that you would say you've, like, learned from it, or do you have any of those moments where, you know, he goes on one of his rogue, like, yeah, life's going well, but I need to just, like, get off the map. Have there been any of those where you hear that and you're just like, maybe I need to do the same? You know, have there been any interesting reactions to that book from you?
Yeah, I think with him, you know, his going off the map and kind of doing his own thing, I kind of tried to do that right after the U.S. Amateur. I was back in Columbus, had a team meeting right away, and then went back home and I took a bunch of media calls. But other than that, I was just hanging out with my dogs on my couch and watching this, like, the Little League World Series at the time, and just hanging out and being a dude. And I think that was really good for me, and just kind of getting myself mentally prepared to take on the spring season or fall season here.
Nice. Well, that's a perfect segue into the first question I want to ask you. So, you often hear someone wins the Masters, certainly the US Amateur, any like really big tournament like that. It's going to change your life by and large. I'm curious, as a runner-up, you have some massive things coming up. It really does change the trajectory as a golfer, but do you feel like your life has kind of changed, or would you just say you're kind of same deal, but something very big has clearly happened?
I've been very conscientious of just trying to be myself throughout the whole process, but there's certainly a lot of things that are going on around me that make it difficult to ignore the fact that something kind of big's going on. I think, first off, you finished second in the amateur, and I was one of those guys early in the summer that wasn't really ranked high enough to get a lot of attention from, possible NIL agencies, and that would kind of turn into a agency relationship after college. And I've had a lot of people knocking at my door there. So just a lot of meetings and phone calls on that end. And then just a lot of the NIL opportunities and trying to set that up for the Masters and the US Open. It's just kind of a lot of just a lot of little things you gotta deal with. But it's been just trying to stay myself. I like to spend a lot of time with the guys back in Columbus and just hang out. And I think being around Ohio State Athletics, where we have a bunch of Olympians and some football players are going to be first round draft picks this spring. You feel normal when you got all this crazy stuff going on.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. I went to Stanford and we had a lot of Olympians, maybe not necessarily on the football and basketball front, where not quite as good. I guess when I was young, like we had McCaffrey when I was just kind of just starting at school and some guys like that. But yeah, certainly a lot of people that were walking around that were like multiple time gold medalists. And so anytime you went and had a runner up finish in a tournament or something, you're like, yeah, I'm really good at golf. And then you get back and you're like, and that girl has four gold medals. It kind of centers you pretty darn fast. So that makes sense. Anything on the NIL front, anything kind of interesting or fun to share? Has it been mostly just club deals and clothing, or like anything kind of on the periphery that has more to do with like the lifestyle side of you?
We've been working on things with getting clothing brands kind of nailed down. Have had a few opportunities come up my way there. And with club deals, I haven't had anything concrete come up either, but I'm hoping to maybe get something settled up here soon. But on the lifestyle side of things, we're trying to take maybe some different angles. And talk about maybe like a head and shoulders thing, or just reaching out to people and see what we can
Nice.
get. It'd be kind of try to be like the next Troy Polamalu of head and shoulders. I think it'd be pretty funny, at least for the Pittsburgh region, because that guy was
Nice.
had some hair. Not just kind of just your basic stuff. It's nothing too crazy, and it's not something that the NIL money, it's really nice, but in golf in particular, it's not. A lot of the numbers you get aren't really enough to move the needle significantly. And so it's like, why would I, a lot of times it's like, why would I take on that commitment when I can just, the money's to be made, on your second contract when you're on tour and stuff like that. So I'm more concerned about just trying to play some good golf.
Yeah, totally. So last question on that front, head and shoulders is a great one. I mean, everyone was talking about your hair at the AM, and that makes a lot of sense. But the Pittsburgh connection with Polamalu is also pretty neat. If you could choose one thing that's like kind of funny and random on the NIL front, if it's, a restaurant or something along those lines, what would you who would you want to pitch yourself to for an NIL deal?
I'd 100% pitch myself to Waffle House. I think
Nice.
we could get some t-shirts like Body by Waffle House. I think it'd be pretty funny. I think that's, I mean, I, that's a go-to breakfast spot for me on the road whenever I'm down south or they're around. It's the same every time. I love that place.
And I'll tell you what, I'm from Charlotte, so I 2 hours from Pinehurst, 2 hours from Augusta. You don't have to go more than about 20 minutes to find a Waffle House near any one of those places. That'd be a pretty good one for kind of the April, May, June tour for you being down that way.
Like, yeah, it'd be a lot of fun to get a little one going and maybe get some free waffles in the as a bonus.
Nice. So moving on, kind of getting back on topic here with the golf. How would you say your perception of yourself as a golfer has changed since Cherry Hills? I guess I'm most curious from a standpoint of like, do you feel a little bit different rolling up to a tournament now? Like when you show up to the first college tournament this season, is your expectation a little bit different? And not necessarily even what you're telling yourself you're going to finish or like what you're going to shoot, but just do you kind of view yourself a little bit differently relative to other players after this summer?
Yeah, I think after, you know, not just Cherry Hills, but just the collective body of my summer and what is able to do, it really kind of has raised the bar for me and what I expect of myself. Like if I finish 20th now, like last year, if I finished 20th, I would have been like, that's okay. But I think, you know, my mind's really set on trying to win golf tournaments. I haven't won a college event yet, and I'd love to, you know, be able to win a college individual event by the time I'm done here this year. And I think it's certainly well within grasp and playing really good golf and got great facilities and great teammates to push me. So I think that's on that end, my expectations have changed. And, you know, the experience has changed a bit too, because now, you know, like last year, I'm kind of a, you know, people know who I am, but it's not, you know, but like now when I show up to a tournament, it's, you know, coaches are coming up to me saying, hey, great playing at the AM, and guys who I play with know who I am. And it's fun and it's a little different, but it's, you know, I'm just, again, like going back to what we were talking about earlier, you know, I'm just trying to be myself through the whole process and not really change who I am.
Yeah. And, you know, for the more passive fan that would probably have heard of you from the US Amateur, but maybe wouldn't know everything that you did throughout the summer. I mean, you went off, finished 29th at NCAAs in stroke play, which doesn't sound impressive, but 29th in NCAAs is not easy to do necessarily. And then you go second at the Dogwoods, second at the Santa Ana, second at the Transmiss, third at the Pac Coast, and then runner up at the US Amateur. So just like a really fantastic summer. I guess what I'd be interested to hear, what part of your game, was there anything in particular that was really good, be it putting, tee ball, iron play, or was it just everything you just felt a little bit more confident and started to really have a good stretch of tournaments?
Yeah, I think, you know, over the spring season, my ball striking really came to life, and a lot of things I've been working on kind of, you know, finally, you know, got there, I guess, especially with the irons. And, you know, my putting was horrendous in the spring. It was actually like, it's pretty dreadful. I was finishing 25th in tournaments where I hit the ball well enough to give myself a chance to win. And I just three putt three or four times around, it seemed like, or anytime I hit it outside 50 feet, and put a lot of work in on that front. And then, you know, got to NCAAs and it was really solid there. And then Dogwood's been even better. And it was such a strong part of my game throughout the whole year. And I think that's one of the reasons I did really well in match play, is because when I had a 40, 50 foot putt, I was getting it within gimme distance half the time, or kind of within that little safety zone where you feel comfortable about making a putt. So it was, that's been huge for me, just getting that putter just more consistent and the speed dialed. And I think that's something that a lot of people overlook. And it's so important to becoming an elite player.
Yeah. I listened to your interview with Senor Adelberg at the back of the range. And you guys talked about how in the final match, I believe you and Dunlap were both like five under through the first 18, just like really fantastic golf being played. And then, I mean, it was a great battle. I watched the whole thing. It was super fun to watch. But, you know, he would edge you over time. And I mean, I'm curious, looking back on it now, what would you say the difference was between you and, I mean, I think most people would probably agree, like you were the second best amateur of anybody this summer, second only to probably Nick Dunlap with the summer that he had. And I mean, these are absolutely tiny margins here. But, you know, what would you say the difference was in that final 18 for him being able to edge you out?
Yeah, I mean, I made probably one or two errors just on the greens. I think I had two putts that were just not great. And then, man, he started to just pour in some 20, 30, and 40 footers. I mean, I remember making the turn in our second 18. We're coming up nine, and he hits it out there to call it like, you know, 30, 40 feet, and I stuff it in there to maybe 6 or 7 feet. And I'm thinking like, man, this is awesome. We're going to get one back. I'm going to go into the back nine. Like maybe it would have been like two back or three back, or it would have been like two back, I think. And, you know, I'm like, it's like, let's go. And then he just rolls in a 40 footer on me. And it's like, man, that's pretty deflating. And then I make my putt to tie the hole. And then we get into number 10 and he rolls another long one in on me. And then I'm like three down. And, yeah, he just made a few more putts than I did. But that being said, I'm like, you know, I'm super proud of how I think I made him earn it, you know, without a doubt. And it's, I have no regrets for that match. And I think that's really important. Just looking back on it, I'm really happy with how I played and just proud of my performance.
Yeah. Do you think you would say that being the difference, that him just making a few more putts, Does it feel like that's potentially the difference? Like that is maybe that slight edge that he would have on you? Or would you say more of that being like, hey, that it just happened to be his day a little bit more? And that kind of is what that difference ends up looking like, is a few more putts going in for the person that's going to have the slightly better day.
Yeah, I'd say, I think he's probably maybe a slightly better iron player than I am. And so maybe he gives himself a few better looks, but over the course of 18 holes, it doesn't really look like a lot. And I think over the course of 18 holes, it's really hard to differentiate two guys' games, especially a guy like Nick and a guy like me. And, that's what happens at a lot of these tournaments is, a lot of guys hit it good and somebody gets hot with the putter and ends up winning by 4 or 5 just because they made a lot of putts. And I think, it was that certainly Nick's day on the greens, for sure. But not to take anything away from him because he's a phenomenal player.
Yeah. I guess this is something you'll be learning a lot more about over the next year, particularly the couple majors that you'll get to play in and any other opportunities that come up. But what would you say to your knowledge right now of guys who are out on tour making a lot of money doing it? Do you feel like you have a pretty keen sense of maybe what that gap that you need to bridge is between where your game is right now and where you want it to be?
Yeah, I think so for sure. I think, for me, just some of the play with the shorter irons, and just getting a little bit more consistent with them. I think when you start to talk about the difference between elite amateur players and elite professional players, it start to get into pretty razor thin margins, but they're just that much more consistent. And, over the course of, a tournament and, a season, it makes a huge difference. And so just for me, I feel like that's just kind of in the lower half of my bag and just giving myself consistently good looks to make birdie.
Yeah. What would you describe as your best attribute as a golfer? Let's say one on just the pure physical side, like I'm a great putter, I hit the ball really well or whatever that is. And then one on the softer side, that may be like, hey, I'm pretty easy going out there and I really have fun playing tournaments. What would you say your two attributes are there?
Yeah, I mean, for me, I think driving is a big advantage of mine. I, consistently carried over 300 yards and hit it relatively straight. I'm usually hitting 70% of fairways or more. So hitting it that long and straight is a huge advantage. For this more the soft skills, I think my ability to not take myself too seriously. Like I'm able to just cuss myself out for about 2 seconds after a bad shot. And by the time I walk 5 yards away from the golf ball where I hit that shot, I'm locked back in and I'm ready to go again. I feel like the ability to kind of, have that release of bad energy and negative energy and then lock back in, that's something that I've been really good at. And I think that's kind of how I've dealt with a lot of the, golf could be really frustrating. And I think that's how I deal so well with it and deal really well with a lot of the pressure that we play under. It's just having a little bit of that release mechanism's helped me a ton.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I can confirm you hit it pretty hard. For context for people, Neil and I got to play a practice round together at Cherry Hills, and I'm very much like an average distance sort of guy. And so when I play with someone who's like, let's say 70th percentile, I'm kind of like chasing the whole day. I'm like, yeah, they're not that much longer than me. Like I can swing a little harder here and maybe try to catch up, which isn't good. When I play with someone like you that's in like the 95th percentile, I'm just like, look, Neil's ball flies further than mine goes, so I just don't even need to worry about trying to chase your drives. Yeah, so that'll definitely be a great skill when you play in some majors and get out on tour and all that stuff.
Oh,
I'm
for
interested to
sure.
hear, as it pertains to the US Amateur, just in general, like what do nerves look like for you on the golf course? I think this is different for everybody. Some people get up to the first tee and like, they're struggling to draw a line on their ball. They're just really nervous for that first tee shot. Some people, I think that first short putt of the day can be tough. Some people, they're fine on course, but they like struggle to eat breakfast. What do nerves look like for you around tournament golf, particularly in big situations like the US Amateur?
For me, a lot of the times it's just in the warm up and kind of like rushing the warm up. Such as I'm the type of guy who likes to take a long amount of time to warm up and just make sure that I'm dialed before I go out there. And I play fast on the course, but on the range, the speed that I hit balls is it's really, really quick, which isn't always good, especially. And I can start, usually my warm up it start, go kind of go through the bag, then we'll go putt. And then kind of build back up through the bag, play the first few holes, putt a few and go out. And sometimes I could finish that first go up through the bag in like 5 or 10 minutes. And then all of a sudden I have 15 minutes until I have to be on the tee, and the rest of my routine is not enough to fix that, and I end up sitting around. So that's just being conscious of my speed is kind of important for me. But like when I'm on the golf course, I feel like I'm able to deal with it pretty well. You know, you obviously you got some adrenaline going, and you know, you might start hitting the ball a club further or things like that. But you know, I feel like I've after kind of dealing with the USAM and everything, you kind of become more aware of that. And I think what's also interesting too is throughout the summer, you know, you go to NCAAs when, you know, it was kind of my first time as in second place after the third round. And there's a lot of nerves going into that fourth round, get into the dogwood and kind of, you know, same deal. And then slightly less nerves. Like I don't feel as nervous. You get to the Sonny Hanna final round and I'm in the last group and I feel really comfortable. And then same thing at the Trans Mississippi and kind of moving on. And I could say the same thing about the US Amateur where, you know, first few matches, you know, a little nervous, but then as you move along, you kind of settle into the whole process. So I think a lot of it is just about being out there a lot and being in those pressure moments a lot that helps you learn.
Yeah, that's a really good answer. Have you started? I mean, I know that there are a million thoughts going through your mind with regard to the Masters, and I'm sure a lot of it is just pure fun, excitement, and like getting out on site for the first time, playing the course casually, eating some pimento cheese, all of that sort of stuff. But I have to imagine as well that there have been plenty of thoughts of like Thursday morning, you know, like getting out there, getting the thing underway. That's going to be a new experience playing in a Masters, a major championship. Is there anything that you've kind of started to think through with regard to how you're going to tackle that first day playing in a major?
Yeah, for me, I think I'm just going to, you know, you're going to attempt to treat it just like any other golf tournament. And I think, you know, at the end of the day, you can really hype up these tournaments and like, you know, like I'm playing the US Amateur and, you know, it's like I'm in the final match, like that's crazy or whatever. But like, you know, your mind might start to wander about like, oh, what if I play bad? Or, you know, am I going to embarrass myself on national television or things like that? But at the end of the day, I think what's, you know, I'm playing golf. You know, there's a lot of people out there that have a lot of worse things going on in life. I mean, I'm in New York right now and just walking down the street, there's, you know, people out there without homes and without jobs and, you know, that are visually distressed. And I'm really lucky to be in the position I am. And I think that having that perspective is going to really help me out a lot.
Yeah, that's impressive. That's really fantastic perspective. And I think you make a good point there that like, I think what you were kind of getting on is like, it's all just golf at the end of the day, like whether it's a practice round at the US Amateur or the second round of stroke play or the second round of the final match, like it's just a round of golf. I mean, this is like a very bush league comparison here, but I recall young in my earlier career, like I had lost in the Carolinas Amateur in the final round. I was kind of right there. And then a couple of weeks later, I was in the Carolinas Junior. I was like 16 or 17 at the time, kind of going into the same position, final round. And I remember talking to a friend who was like 50 years old a couple of days prior and asking like, hey, do you know, I really putt the ball badly in that final round of the Carolinas Amateur. Like what are your tips on final round putting? And I remember him just kind of like reverse engineering that statement and being like, why are you focused on final round putting? You know, like it's just another round at the end of the day. When we kind of make these things out in our mind of like, I could sit there and ask you, like, how are you going to tackle the first round of the Masters? But it's like first round of the Masters is kind of irrelevant. You know, it's just like, it's a round of golf at the end of the day. And so I think particularly putting it within that perspective of like all of us who get to play golf, especially in fun settings are a lot luckier than many others. So I think it's a good way to kind of ground yourself with it.
Yeah. It's I think it's important to just having that perspective. And, you know, I think ultimately you have, if a lot of these guys make it on tour and if I make it on tour, I think we have a responsibility to give back to those who are less fortunate and grow the game.
Yeah, totally.
It's important.
So feel free to go fully diplomatic on this one, but I am interested to hear your response here. So had you won the final of the US Amateur, it's obviously an official thing that you would have been on the Walker Cup team. And after losing that final match, I think I was certainly in the camp and I think plenty of people were that like, there's a very real case to be made that you could have been on that team. What was your reaction to being an alternate for the team?
Yeah, I mean, I think initially disappointment. You know, I got the handshake after the match and they let me know kind of right afterwards. And it was a little bit of it stung a little bit more just hearing that right after I'd lost the match. But, you know, I think for me, at the end of the day, it's, I know that I'm a good enough player to be on that team. And so that's, number one, just adding some fuel to the fire. And, I know that I got bigger things ahead of me. And I think the second thing is too, if you would ask me 6 or 7 months ago, in the middle of the spring season, like, oh, are you worried about the Walker Cup? I would have just laughed at your face and said, I have no chance of being on the Walker Cup team. I was 700th in Wagger, and the only way I could have done it was by winning the US Amateur. And I think I gave myself, even if I didn't make it to the final match, if I would have lost in semis, I still would have felt like I had a solid case to be an alternate or, be on the team just with how I played throughout the summer. And so I think looking back, just really proud about my summer and, putting together one of the best summers of any amateur is just really special. And, things not being on the Walker Cup team and not being able to win in St. Andrews with those guys, but really happy for them. And, looking forward to hopefully a Ryder Cup down the road or President's Cup, keeping my sights on what's ahead.
Yeah, that's more really great perspective. I think that you'll hear people talk about this concept of the hedonic treadmill. There's always more, when you get somewhere, but it's important to look back and say, well, just as you put it, like 5 months ago, if you had told me I was sitting here and I was an alternate on the Walker Cup team, you'd probably say the same thing. Like, that stings. I was close, but like there's some really cool things that happened for me to get to that position, And so to pretend as if I'm extremely disappointed given everything that transpired for me to get here, is probably not the best way to look at it. You mentioned the Ryder Cup. How are you into the Ryder Cup? Are you excited about next week?
I'm pumped about it. That's I at JMU, I had tons and tons of foreign teammates, most of them from Europe. Like, we had a bunch of Spaniards and guys from the UK and France. And, I mean, we got into it every time the Ryder Cup was up. And so I'm really excited to, see the guys head over to, I guess it's in Rome, yeah, and head over to Rome and battle it out. And I think we got a really good team this year. And I think it's cool, too, to see a guy like Ludvig, fresh out of college playing on the European team. I think that's kind of just shows the world how good college golf is now too. That you have a guy like that who can just go, jump out on the scene and be one of the best pros in the world. And so I think I'm excited to see how he plays and handles that situation. And I think there's a lot of good storylines coming up this next week.
Yeah. It's interesting to hear you talk about that. How into golf would you say you are, like relative to most college golfers? I think it's probably true of anything, particularly a sport like tennis. You hear it all the time, but I think people always are going to look at college golfers and assume like, oh, this is all these guys do. It's all they think about, but it's not necessarily true of everyone. But how would you say relative to teammates and other people you've been around, like how into the game you are, and then what specific aspects, be it, watching professional golf, or some guys are total gearheads, people are into golf course architecture. How into it are you? And then what particular aspects are you passionate about?
I'd say that like certain aspects I would be not as super passionate about, and then others I'm really into. For me in particular, like the equipment side of things, I'm tinkering around a lot. I got more golf clubs than I know what to do with in my apartment back at school. It's kind of an issue actually. Got like 10, 12 putters that just flip through the bag a lot. And I think it's kind of one of the great things about golf is that you're always searching for more. And I think because of that, it makes it so much fun and you never get tired of it. And I think that's one of the reasons I'm really into the equipment side of things, because you're always thinking about like, what if I can get more out of this club than what I have here, or things like that. In terms of professional golf, and like watching it, I don't really watch a lot of golf just because I play so much golf and travel so much for golf, and, following along on Instagram and kind of know who wins and then know who's really hot. But if you went, I couldn't tell you who the 15th ranked guy in the world rankings is. I don't even know if it's Scheffler, Rahm, or Rory who's number one right now, I'm going to be honest. I think it's, when you're a college golfer, if you let it all consume you and it becomes who you are, then that can be unhealthy. And I like to, have a lot of things outside of golf. Like I personally like to go fly fishing a lot when I'm able to. I'm a big Pittsburgh Steelers fan, even though we're just probably not going to be that good this year. Still really into the team and hopeful. And I'll just kind of invest some time elsewhere than the golf, just because being having your mind on it 24/7, I feel like it's just kind of a recipe to get burnout.
Yeah, that makes sense. So I'm interested. You have a degree in quantitative finance, with minors in math and economics, if I'm correct. Clearly, I think at this point, professional golf is probably what's on your mind, but whether it's just like intellectual passion or curiosity or something that you've thought about professionally in the past, where are your more, nerdy sort of interests? I think there probably have to be a few, based on some of the academic background.
For sure, for sure. On a finance side of things, this is just so nerdy. I really love exotic options
You're
and
talking
pricing
to a
exotic
nerd, FYI,
options.
so you're good.
Yeah, so like that type of stuff I was really into, and I think just so cool and fun, and what you can kind of do with those type of products is just so interesting. And also, like, I'm one of these guys who, I have to take one class next semester to finish up this certificate that I'm doing. And I'm talking to my academic advisor about, like, can I just like toss in like calculus three in there, like linear algebra, just something for fun. And so I just like math and stats just really interests me. I think if I was to not do golf, I'd probably end up in the finance world or something else. Is like with my background in stats and math and sports, like I'd love to go into sports analytics. And I used to play baseball. I'm really big into that. I'd love to be, analyst for a baseball team and things like that. And if you're one of those guys, you're kind of helping out those next guys who are coming to MLB and helping them improve. And I think that'd be a cool thing to do.
You a Moneyball fan? Have you seen that movie or read the book?
Yeah, huge fan of that movie. It's a really good one. I think it's pretty interesting how that they kind of changed the game with stats and how it's used in baseball, and really instead of just how they view players, and kind of optimizing outcomes, or optimizing not outcomes, but just probabilities.
So you mentioned linear algebra. Have you ever taken that before?
I have, yes.
Yeah, that was
Yeah,
not one of my
so.
favorite classes, I will say. But have you ever done any stochastic modeling or just like general optimization classes?
Yeah, we've done a lot of stochastic modeling. There's a lot of, we do a lot of random stochastic variables and a few other things. With the quantitative finance program, we dived more into the kind of what's behind all the models and everything. Especially kind of, if you're a normal finance major, you learn about Black-Scholes and all that. But then, like, diving into that and then things beyond it. So there's a lot of d done a lot of that type of stuff, and it's fun. Tricky,
Yeah.
but once you've learned it and got the hang of it, I think it's really cool.
Yeah. For the right sort of mind, that stuff is interesting. My degree in school was somewhat similar to that, I would say, and a lot of just like micro analysis on everything. And so I think people are always interested that I'll sit there and like look at I've got a seltzer can in front of me. Like I'll sit there and break this thing down in 75 different ways because I just, I'll micro analyze literally anything to a complete and utter fault. But that is what it is. And now a quick word about our friends at Good Walk Coffee. Mr. Simus, what's your coffee game been like recently?
Man, I always, and I mean always, have the Mudball Half Calf on me. I've been loving the bump and run cold brews on the go, and lately, it's been the breakfast ball.
Give me a little bit more color on the bump and run cold brew.
Well, I love making coffee at home, but I can't do it all the time. And when I really got to move and I need my good walk, I reach straight in the fridge, grab a can, and go, and I get exactly what I need.
Where can the people go if they want to get involved with our friends at Good Walk Coffee?
You can purchase all your coffee, cold brew, espresso, pods, cases, beans, merch, and more for 20% off using code THETIE. That is THETIE at checkout. Set your custom subscription. The world is yours only at goodwalkcoffee.com.
Okay, well, let's finish up with some quicker questions here. So you describe the scene. This is from your interview at the back of the range. You describe the scene on 17 at Cherry Hills after you hit it to 6 inches to more or less in the match. I mean, you still had to kind of wait out that chip shot, which I was sweating with you on as well. But you described it as the scene from Tiger at Eastlake, which I would say is a pretty good comparison. Now, where I go with that one is I think you're overlooking the great Michael Block at Oak Hill. So what percent Tiger versus Michael Block would you say you were in that moment?
Oh, gosh. I think the scene itself and how everyone kind of like crowded everything was more like Tiger at Eastlake. But I think in terms of being a fan favorite of the week, more like a Michael Block moment. I mean, what he did there at Oak Hill, right? Yeah, I think at Oak Hill, it was really just special to watch. And I remember that was one of those things that I was paying attention to all week because it was just kind of cool to see a club pro just go and tear it up. And the ace there was unbelievable. I guess you could say it's a little bit like that in terms of the just the sentiment behind it and just kind of the more the, you know, as an amateur, we're playing the game for fun and it's more about the purity of the sport. So I think it's pretty cool.
Yeah. Nice. Are you privy to Primanti Bros, Pittsburgh guy?
Love Primanti Brothers. Yeah. That's a go-to when I'm back home.
Perfect. Okay. So for the people here, description, thoughts, visits per year. I know what it is, but I've never been, don't really know a ton about it. Curious on your Primanti Bros takes.
So Primanti Brothers, it's the normal sandwich will be some type of meat. So you could do like ham or like a Philly cheesesteak meat. But then on the sandwich, you could put it always comes with fries, coleslaw, and a tomato, and it's on thick Italian bread. And the idea and history behind it was that, you know, where the original location is, there was a lot of truck stops and truckers coming in and out of. So they just wanted a handheld thing that they could eat at one go. So they didn't need like their sandwich meat and their fries and the coleslaw. And it just ends up being a big bundle of goodness. It's just this tough to describe. I'm probably catching up on 10 visits a year. You know, whenever we go to Steeler games back home, usually a good spot to go before a game. Even just going in the winter with friends or meeting up, it's just it's a good spot. You know, they have a few locations now. It's just there's one right down the road from my house, which can be dangerous, but it's nice to have one close by. It's a good meetup spot.
I would say you exceeded expectations on all fronts in that answer. I was half expecting I've heard of it, but I don't really know what you're talking about. I mean, history lesson. I was thinking maybe a visit or two per year. We're pushing double digits. That was great stuff there. So Primanti Bros, anyone that makes it to Pittsburgh, give it a run. Okay. So yeah. I imagine, you know, you said on your interview with Ben, you have not been to Augusta before, but imagine like any, you know, young golfer who loves watching the Masters, you're probably pretty familiar with the golf course. What is a hole that you feel like you're going to be pretty dialed on based on your shot shape or just your game? And then what's a hole that you're like kind of already thinking about and a little bit nervous for a couple swings on?
I think 11 is going to suit me really well. I think 18 is going to suit me really well. Just kind of that like left to right shot. That's mainly what I'm able to hit. I'm particularly, and I wouldn't say I'm worried, but I've been thinking about strategy on 2 and 13, the par fives, that just this huge dogleg lefts. I know on probably 13, I'm probably gonna have to try like hit three wood and try to turn it over, which isn't my favorite shot in the world. And then on 2, yeah, you, from what I've heard, you pretty much have to try and turn over a driver, hit a little draw there. So, you know, I think, you know, obviously, you know, the shot shape can change a bit by the time you get to April, but those are ones that are going to have my attention, I guess, when I get on property and just making sure those are dialed. I think at the end of the day, those are the type of shots where you're not going to lose a ton of shots if you decide to hit through it or like, you know, it's a par five, you know, you can bat it down there and then try to get up and down for birdie. Not a lot of eagles are to be had on those holes just with the difficulty of the green complexes, but certainly love to make an eagle or two and get some crystal for the trophy case.
Yeah, that wouldn't suck. So, you know, a lot of guys who have struggled to draw the ball over the years, I mean, like Martin Keimer, people say like kind of ruined his career trying to play the Masters in certain ways. Going into the tournament, do you think for you it's more of like finding a go-to shot or two, whether it's kind of that like back of the stance three wood that you know you can turn over, or is it a little bit more of like formally working on the shot shape, starting now, trying to get a little bit more of a straight or draw sentiment shot in the bag?
No, I'm one of those guys that's just kind of about creating a shot that I can go to. That's just gonna be more consistent over time. I feel like if you start to become too neutral and try to start working every golf shot, then you're gonna be really inconsistent. So you know, like for me, that, you know, just kind of like that back foot three wood, you know, that's something that I'm gonna be working on. And you know, you could even change your equipment around a little bit to help you with that. If, you know, a three woods type of club that you only want to draw, then, you know, we're lucky enough with technology nowadays that we can, I could find a three wood and that's pretty much only going to go left. And I could make a driver that's only going to go right. And, you know, we could figure that out. And nowadays too, with how long three woods go, you know, it's, you're not losing a lot hitting three wood on some of those par fives. You can still reach them in two if you get one out there. So it's I think I answered your question, but just trying to find some go-to shots and some feels that I can work with consistently.
Yeah, totally. And I mean, you're a guy, you've got plenty of distance. Like if you're, as you put it, you know, if you find a three wood that turns over nicely for you, even on a, whatever it is, 580, 590 yard hole, like the second, if you draw a three wood down off that bunker, like you're getting it down there plenty far to get towards the green. Same on 13. You don't need distance. You just might need a little bit of a shot shape on a couple of those. So that definitely makes sense. And yeah, I mean, if you, you know, you're going to play way better golf if you are playing good golf for you, even if that's left to right balls, than sitting around worrying about like trying to hit shot shapes that work for the course, right? Like you're always better off hitting good shots for you than you are like trying to hit the perfect golf course shot. So I think that probably makes sense.
Without a doubt. I think you could see a lot of the greats out there. A lot of them just kind of played one shot mostly. I mean, like Nicklaus just hit a dang cut everywhere. You know, it's like, you can do that. And he's got a few majors and a few masters under his belt. So I think if he can do that, I can figure it out.
Yeah. Good stuff. Okay, Neil, last question today. So I mean, what do you hope that the stamp is that you left on Cherry Hills? People were super excited watching you throughout the week. I think you kind of became the, the match play darling of sorts. There were a lot of people that were rooting for you. I guess in particular, like some of the young guys out there, some of the 12-year-olds that were out following, particularly that final match, like what do you hope they will take away in kind of remembering your run there?
Yeah, well, I hope that inspired a lot of them to work hard on their games and get better and aspire to do things like I did. And I think, you know, for a lot of those guys in high school and a lot of the kids who are out there, I think, especially if you're 14, 15, and you're not getting recruited to places like Ohio State or Stanford, or, you know, you don't really have any Power Five offers. I mean, that's, you know, I think I saw the stat that I was ranked something like 400th in my class when I committed to James Madison. And that's just in my class, and, you know, out of junior golfers, I was probably somewhere in the 800 range. This guy is just not ranked well. You know, my Wagger wasn't under 1,000 until maybe in the spring, and then start out the summer and my world amateur ranking was 800. And, you know, I think just goes to show that if you keep putting in the hard work, you know, those things, the rankings will take care of themselves. You know, finishes will take care of themselves. It's not necessarily about where you start, but just kind of trusting that process through time. You know, if you're doing the right things for 5-6 years, you're going to get better and you're going to get to the point where you're beating a lot of guys. It's just kind of staying patient and sticking with the right things and just trusting yourself that you're doing what's best. I think that's super important. It's kind of crazy to look back on my journey and just think about where I was 5 years ago and where I am now. But I know that that didn't happen overnight, and that it was just a result of just really grinding for, you know, 5 straight years and just working hard.
Yeah, that's great. Well, Neil, I really like your perspective on everything. This was a really fun chat today. I appreciate you taking the time for it. Looking forward to seeing how everything goes in April and May, or April and June rather. And we'll be rooting hard for you. Excited to track all your progress.
Thanks, Henry. I really appreciate you having me on. It's been a pleasure being on with you guys.
Yeah, man.